Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
Roy Matlock Jr. here, and we're doing the Money and Business Hour, and we just continue to put that education out there, because with education, you can have more confidence, and the more confidence you have, the better off you're going to be when it comes to making good decisions over time. And all those good decisions are like compound interest. We make good decisions, good choices, and eventually we get good outcomes. And today we're going to continue down the path of some of the things that you run into, some of the different things at retirement. So you're either right about to retire or you are already retired, and some questions and some of the biggest risk. We came off of last show where we talked about some of the, there's seven basic risk involved in that. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that and then give you some ideas on how to avoid that kind of stuff. And so first thing we always got to do is we got to consider when we retire our income sources. And so if you start looking, there's all these different things that you can do to generate income. So you've got different types of income. You got Social Security. The decision then is, when do I start drawing it? I have maybe some pensions, and do I have those protected in any way? In other words, am I getting the life income on it, or is it a joint with survivorship? We have to figure out a way to protect our purchasing power, because that affects our income. With inflation, rolling high, you better have something like that. You got to figure out what you are going to do about your health to make sure that, hey, if you were to go into a nursing home or anything like that, you may have money sitting at the bank. Rates are low. Things a lot of people don't know is something called an in-service withdrawal. Once you reach 59 and a half, it opens up your retirement plan options to where you can stay at your job and then continue to contribute to your job, but roll over your existing balance. I have a lot of clients to do that. Should you convert to a Roth, okay, when you retire? Should you downsize your house? What about our mortgage? Should you pay the house off, or what about a reverse mortgage? And then how much should I withdraw? So think about all these things that go on. And a lot of people are out there, they're trying to get ahead. And if you're listening right now and you say, man, I didn't think about all that. Well, guess what? That's what we do. We help people create retirement income plans. For the most part, if you have somebody helping you, or you have some idea, you can pick a target date fund at your work, and you just start putting money in. You don't think about it. If you buy those target date funds, in most cases, they're going to do you pretty well. And you put that in your 401k, you just keep on rocking through that, and one day you have all this money. Well, then that's what are you going to do? Now we got to go to the second wave, which is, when do we pull it out? Which one do we pull first? What about that kind of stuff? And so today we're going to get into that. We've got Social Security, we've got company-sponsored plans, individual IRAs, we got outside investments, you may have annuities, you may have some real estate. So you got all these different things that we're going to choose from. And I'm going to just give you one quick example. I have people all the time, they ask me, when should I pull my Social Security out? All right. And generally speaking, and what we do is kind of an analysis of your situation, but the sooner you pull it out, unless you're working, okay? Now, if you're 62 and not working, I tell people, go ahead and pull it out. Do it now. And if you're still working, you're going to have a Social Security age about 66, 67. That's going to require that's when you get what's called full Social Security. And what that means is that you have worked to that age. And now if you earn money and you're still working, you're not going to get penalized. Where if you take it earlier, you're going to get penalized. And then you wait all the way to age 70. So let me give you an example. Just the pure math. If you take your Social Security, now if you're working, you're going to get penalized. It will come back later, but you get penalized if you are working and you start at age 62. But I know a lot of people that, hey, they're starting, they're 62, all right, and they're retired, all right. And if you go ahead and take it, just the income, if you're a maximum Social Security, now get this, $2,368 will be the maximum amount of money you could get when you're 62. If you wait until you're 67, you're $142,000 in the negative already by waiting. If you divide that, now the difference is if you wait, you get an extra $1,015 a month. So let's think through this. So if you take it at 62, you're not getting penalized, you're working. Okay, not working, you're not getting penalized. So you're getting the 2368. That is $142,000 that you're going to have received by the time you're 67. If you take $142,000, divide that by the additional amount of money that you would get by waiting, that's 139 months to break even with no returns. If you're 67 and you wait to age 70, the difference is $3,383 versus $4,195, okay, maximum payout. That is $121,000 you're in the hole. And if you take the additional $800 that you are going to get later, how long does it take to make it up? 149 months. Now, so what happens is that, and that's doesn't include if you invest that money. So I always tell people, if you're not working, take it early. Generally speaking, it's always, we got to look at things, and then we can invest that money. And if you're at 67 and you're working, 66, 67, you're working, go ahead and take it. We can put that into a retirement account even because you're working. And so there's all these different things. So that's just some ideas. If you need help on trying to figure this out, we sit down, we do a complete analysis, like a retirement income analysis, where we'll take a look at all your resources that you have, everything from your, should you pay your home off, give you all the recommendations, that kind of thing. We'll then in turn look at all your income sources and say, here's the one I would pull first, and here's what we would, why we would do that. This is the next one, okay, that I would pull. This is what I would do with my existing IRA, would I convert it? Possibly. All right. We'll look at your mortgage and find out, you know, when rates are, you know, I call it almost free money because you're getting it at like 2.5%. Should you even pay your house off? Generally speaking, I think it's a bad idea. I say generally speaking, pretty much across the board, I think it's a bad idea to go do that. And so what we'll do is, and when you're thinking through your retirement planning, first thing you got to do is you got to have a plan, okay? And the plan is, let's take a look at everything you're doing. So today we're going to get into and continue on some of the different things and decisions and risk that go into retiring. So if you're right now getting ready to retire, or if you're over 59 and a half, you really need to be listening in on this, because I'm going to give you step-by-step a plan of action to create a lifetime income with the resources that you have. And so with that being said, visit RoyMatlockJr.com if you'd like to find out more about our retirement income analysis, where we'll sit down and show you where to go. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Roy Matlock Jr., and we're going to go into the next phase of this, and we're going to talk more about the risks that are involved in retirement. If you listened in to the last show or you've gone to the podcast, you can kind of get the first parts of it. But there's seven risks that I see people have in front of them when they retire. The first one is they're in debt. And so what we have to do is we have to eliminate bad debt. We got to be smart with our debt. In many cases, you can do things with your home that can really revamp your debt, that kind of thing. And so, but here's the bottom line. If you have bad debt, credit cards, car payments, all that kind of stuff, you need to, that's the first thing, because by getting that corrected, that will give you cash flow. That cash flow will allow you to pull less on your retirement plans in order to pay your bills, and then don't go back in debt. The second risk is longevity. Longevity is you outlive your money. You know, I always tell people this, that, you know, wouldn't it be great to live to, you know, 97? My mom's 97. And if you could be in good health, that would be great. But it wouldn't be great if you ran out of money when you were 85. And so one of the things you have to do is you have to plan for that going out in the future. What are some of the big plans and the cost that go into that? Well, the third risk is healthcare. Healthcare can involve just your plain healthcare. But in addition to the healthcare risk, you've got long-term care, which is something that I recommend most people, unless they're really way ahead of the money game, that they consider long-term care insurance. That allows you to you know, have some additional asset protection. All right. Then we go into taxation. The tax man comes on all of these retirement plans that we've been saving taxes on since, you know, maybe 20, 30 years. You know, if you put money in an IRA or you put money into a 401k or 403b, any of those kind of plans, most people will put that in and they take a tax deduction on it. And so they haven't paid any tax on it. So then when they pull it out, they have to start paying taxes on it. So then we get into things like, should we convert to a Roth IRA? So how do you determine that? Well, there's a lot of things. You know, the first thing is you look at your tax bracket. You look at, you know, when you're going to start pulling it, if you need it or don't need it. Do you have cash outside of your retirement plan so you don't have to cash in your retirement plan and then cash in more of your retirement plan to pay the taxes on the money that you had to pull out of your retirement plan? I know it sounds crazy, but you know, if you have outside cash to where you can keep your retirement plan intact and just pay taxes, you know, I like that idea better than I do having to pull more out in order to pay the taxes on the tax. So with that, and then we go into market risk, we have inflation risk and inheritance risk. Inheritance risk. So today I'm going to get into more detail about market risk. Okay. So here's what happens. When you retire has a lot to do with how things work out. Okay. So let me give you an example. If you retire and you were retiring in 2007 and in 2008, 2009, 2010, you were pulling money out, then if you didn't have part of your money in something that was immune, you know, pretty much to the markets, okay, then, you're never immune, but if you didn't have something in the form of good allocation fixed accounts, you were selling out your retirement plan at a discount in order to live, okay? Now, let's take the same person, okay, that was able to retire maybe in 2010, all right? They saw the markets recover. And then when they started pulling, they were seeing a bull market going forward. And so what happens is the time that you have when it comes to markets has a lot to do with your outcome. And also it has to do with your asset allocation, what you're going to do in order to make sure that you are okay in a downside market. So let me give you an example. Well, there's a lot of different ways that, you know, that people talk about and they say, oh, this is over with. It's no longer like that. The 4% pull, you know, is that, and then about a 60-40 stock or bond, you know, and different things like that. But historically, if you go into what's called a balanced portfolio, that's where you have half stocks, half bonds. All right. You're looking at the stock market's averaged about 10 forever. Bonds have averaged, you know, basically about 4. So if you're half and half, you're getting about 7, you know, and if you get 7 and you pull 4, then what's happening is you got a little bit of money reinvested on average, and then that will be something where you can keep up with inflation. And so over time, you see your dollars grow. Just to give an example, inflation, $10,000, you know, 30 years later, if it repeats what it did at 3%, you're going to need $24,000. All right. So if you're 60 and you have a joint life expectancy of you and your spouse and of 90 years old, all right, then what ends up happening is you got to double your income during that time. And so then we have markets go down. You say, well, what do I do? Well, the idea behind the 50-50 stock and bond portfolio is that when the stock market's down, they're going to pull from the bonds. And when the stock market's up, you're going to take some of it off the top. And over a period of time, you get a little less volatility. And the math of losses doesn't affect you the way it normally would. And what the math of losses is that if you lose 10%, you have to make more than 10% to get back even. And so anyway, so we start looking at all those kind of things. And so what I tell people is this: we have to have different sources of income that may be different in the ways the markets react. In other words, if you have some money sitting in an annuity, okay, that's got guaranteed lifetime income on it, well, you might have some of your money there, because that way, if the markets go down and you're pulling, you know, in many cases, 5% or so, you get to pull more. But what they do, they give you a lifetime income guarantee. So we might have a little bit of our money sitting there to avoid market risk. And then that way, if the market goes to zero, I mean, if your account goes to zero, what happens is you still continue to get your lifetime income. So you might take a portion of your money there. You might have another portion of your money sitting in a fund that's got some bonds in it. Okay, we do that. Many of you may have real estate that you're doing. All right. So you've got all these different things, and you got Social Security, which allows you maybe to pull your Social Security and live on that, okay, while the markets go down. We don't know what the markets are going to do. We just know over a period of time, if you're allocated correctly, you'll end up doing better. There's a it's all math, but I'm just going to give you an example. If over a 20-year period in retirement, you know, if you just pick up an extra 0.5%, it works out to be about 5 years of income. So when you're allocated correctly, and that's why I always tell people that, you know, if you're an expert in one area, it may not be that you're an expert in another area. That's why I always go find experts. You know, I take golf lessons, and I have a guy that's I consider an expert teacher of golf, and I have a CPA, and I go to that CPA, even though I do a lot of research and stuff like that. If I know more than my CPA, then I need a different CPA. If I know more than my financial advisor, then I probably need a better financial advisor. If I know more about personal training than my personal trainer does, then, you know what, I probably should get a different one. And so what I always tell people is get with an expert, all right? And an expert can allow to teach you things that you don't know. And how do they become experts? Well, they put the hours in. You know, I started doing this 36 years ago in the same city. I don't have to hide out. I've been here my whole life helping people with their money. And so what I try to do is give people good information so they can be an informed client. And if they're an informed client and they understand what's going on, you don't have to know everything. The likelihood that you will have a better outcome is much greater. So I want to encourage you, if you're listening right now, to get educated. How do you get educated? Well, if you're listening now, you know, this is part of it. I mean, we plan our vacations. We spend hours researching everything. But when it comes to our money, how much time are you putting into it? So here's some ideas. Maybe you go to roymatlockjr.com and sign up, or go to Apple or Spotify, any of those. And I've got about 90 shows that will allow you to learn about money. So if you do that, guess what? You'll start getting educated, all right? And once you get educated, you know what will happen? Things will get better, right? I mean, that's the way I like to do things. I like to know what I'm talking about, right? So what we're going to do, we're going to continue down building blocks that will allow you to have a confident retirement, all right? And to avoid some of the risk, inflation risk, you know, and inheritance risk. We're going to get into that when we come back, and then we're going to get into some of the building blocks. Hope you're enjoying the show, and I would encourage you to visit roymatlockjr.com for all of the past shows or pick up our podcast. We'll be right back. Roy Matlock Jr. here. If you're just tuning in, this is the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hour, where we talk about money and, you know, how to make it and how to keep it and how to invest it, that kind of thing. And this is kind of our retirement show today about how do you pull money, some of the things you need to avoid and stuff like that. So the last, we have in market risk. We talked about that. We have inflation risk. So you have to get involved and have some things in the market in order to keep up with inflation. That's the mindset. You know, if you buy stocks, tended to be better about, you know, keeping up with inflation. And real estate, things like that. And so we want to find things that not only pay us an income, but have appreciation on top of that. And then lastly, I see people all the time, and as they get older, it's just like me. I'm 60. I think I'm much younger, but I'm actually 60. And at 60 years old, one of the things that you think about is, what if something happened to me? Okay. I know it's going to happen one day. What if something happens? How do I have my kids set up, all right, to where I can pass money, you know, to my children or to a charity, whatever I want to do, in an easy way? So I'm going to talk a little bit about that right now, and then we're going to get into continuing down this confident path, some investment choices, stuff like that. So here's some of the things that happen, all right? So I'm going to give you an example of what I do with my money. So you have basically two types of accounts when you look at probate and inheritances and stuff like that. You have the type that you can name beneficiaries on, to where it directly avoids probate. things like your IRA, your 401k, life insurance, annuities, things like that. And so what those accounts do is you name a beneficiary, and then that beneficiary can get that money regardless of whether or not you have a bunch of debt on your estate or anything like that. Then you've got other type of accounts, your assets, maybe they're regular mutual funds, maybe you got a rental property, you got stuff like that, okay, that are in your estate. So that right there is doesn't avoid probate, but it goes in your estate. All right. So then you have to settle the estate. So now what do I do for, you know, my estate planning? Well, the first thing that I did was I set up a living trust. And what a living trust is a way to take those non-retirement assets, non-probate avoiding assets, and stick it into a trust. Now, what the trust does is basically dictate what happens when you die. And so you can set things up to have what we call a spendthrift clause, which is one of the things that I have in mind. So what is spendthrift? Well, you know, if you've got millions of dollars and stuff like that, you don't want your kids to go blow through it. All right. So my trust, what I did was I said, well, when I pass, they will get 25% of the money. The rest of it will remain invested. And they can get another chance in 10 years. And so something happens to me, they get 25%, the rest of it's invested. 10 years later, if they blew through it the first time, they get a second chance. And the good news is if the markets are doing well and it's invested properly, 10 years later, the account will be bigger even after giving up the 25%. And so then it just keeps on going like that. The next thing that I did was I made my, rather than individually passing this money on, it went into what's called an irrevocable trust. Now, what does that trust do? Well, the trust, by doing that, it has the ability to avoid lawsuits and divorces and stuff like that because the trust is an entity and it owns the money. Now, am I a lawyer? No, I'm not a lawyer. But I've done a lot of this stuff and referred this to people. You always want to get legal advice, and you can't be taking all your advice from the guy on the radio. But I understand this stuff because I set it up for myself. And then I set up what's called a life insurance trust. And why did I do that? Well, a life insurance trust will be paid outside of my estate. Now, what is that for? Well, who knows where estate taxes are going to go one day. But if you've got some money, the last thing you want to do is say, here you go, Mr. Government, take 50% of my money, okay, that I worked for and I'd already paid taxes on to get to begin with. So I paid income taxes, and now you're going to take the money that I was going to leave behind? All right. No, I don't want to do that. So then I set up a life insurance trust designed to be able to pay potential estate taxes. So I did that kind of thing. So when I go through and I start looking at inheritance and probate risk, let me give you an example. I had a client just recently that they named their children's the beneficiary. Well, the next thing you know, the grandfather did this. Well, that sounded like a great idea to give a grandkid, but the grandkid was underage. All right. So now guess what you got? Oh, you got another problem. You got to go to probate court in order to get all this fixed. All right. And set up all this stuff. So you want to, rather than that, if you had a trust, the trust could be the beneficiary. And then the trust could dictate to send money to the kid. Right. So there's all these different things that go into this. And so when I meet with people, what I try to do is take a look at, okay, today we're retiring. What are we going to do next? Well, we got to get an income plan in place that's going to allow you to keep up with inflation, never run out of money. And then we're going to do these things with the idea that we're going to protect. We're going to protect that income. We're going to protect you against, you know, inflation by doing things that typically do better with when inflation kicks in and keeps up more. And then what we're going to do is we're going to have a taxation plan to where we can cut your taxes in any way we can. I've got people that I've worked with where by reevaluating their whole assets and things like that to where they've been living and not paying taxes hardly ever, all right, and still having a good income. And so avoiding taxes, you know, that RMD that's going to be happening at one time at 72, required minimum distribution. How do we want to do that? All these different things. So what we do is I sit down and I look at it. And if you're at or near retirement, these are areas that you need to know about, because if you don't know about it, it will hurt you. I've always heard that. Well, what you don't know won't hurt. No, it does hurt you. And so if you would like to find out more and get a complete overview analysis of what you're doing when it comes to your money, go to my website. Download some of the resources to begin with. Listen to some of the previous shows, which will allow you to get more educated, more familiar with the way we do business. And then if you want help, you can call our office, 615-843-2999, 615-843-2999. Or you can fill out one of the forms and we'll have someone follow back up with you and show you how to make this thing happen. And so keep this in mind, guys, that everything you do, you have different choices. Always. Choices are the key. So you want to make good choices. So what are some of the building blocks of a confident retirement plan? The first one is, do you have a high degree of certainty that you're going to be able to pay your bills, right? Hey, if you know you can quit and it's going to be okay, and you feel pretty certain about that, and you've got, you know, the day-to-day necessities, food, housing, transportation, health care, you know you can pay for that, all right? You've got protected and non-protected income sources for, like, a sustainable lifetime income. Guess what? You're confident. You feel great. Life is good, all right? The next thing is, what are your lifestyle issues? What are optional expenses? The lifestyle block includes discretionary spending, the stuff you can live without, you know, such as travel or, you know, spending money on the grandkids, eating out, entertainment, all right? So when we go out and do things, what we want to do is we want to have a plan, our normal plan, and then we can budget in. Can we do some of these extra things? We don't want to go out there and blow all of our money and then be worried one day because we were buying our kids stuff and doing things like that. And so anyway, so what constitute a lifestyle expense will vary. You know, I love to play golf. All right. So I'm going to make sure that's built into my lifestyle. So the point is that over time you get to that point. The third one is an emergency cushion. An emergency fund gives you more confidence. All right, think about this. If you're confident, you don't worry. Isn't that a much better way? All right, so what you want to do is have an emergency fund set aside, and you want to include that in there. So with that being said, guys, we'll be right back. I hope you're enjoying the show. My name's Roy Matlock Jr. We'll talk to you in a minute. Roy Matlock Jr. here, and today's show we're talking about planning for a very confident retirement, all the things that go into it. And if you need help when it comes to retirement planning and you would like an analysis, a real analysis where we look at everything, go to RoyMatlockJr.com or call 615-843-2999. Right now, my organization, we've got about 40,000 clients right now. So we've been doing this for a long, long time, and we can help you. And so if you'd like help, visit RoyMatlockJr.com or call 615-843-2999. As we came out of the break, four key building blocks of a confident retirement. First one is, are your living essentials covered? The next one is lifestyle issues, such as do we have that built into the budget? Third one is emergency fund. And the last one is, do we have a plan to pass on the wealth? Okay. You know, for some people, leaving a legacy is a defining goal, okay? I mean, they want to be the one that changed the family tree. Think about that. You know, my father passed away 7 years ago. My mother's still living. And no one prior to my father ever had anything. Matter of fact, he paid off both of my grandmother's houses for him. He went and made it. He changed the family tree. And then it got then one day it will pass on to me and my brother and my sisters. All right. And then it'll go to my kids and their kids and all that kind of stuff. Don't we want to have a plan for that to happen? Wouldn't it be awful to think that one generation makes it and the next one destroys it? And so if you don't have a plan after death, then guess what? You know, you're not going to change the family tree. And so So let's take a look. Let's put some of the building blocks into action. The first thing, what's an optimal retirement withdrawal rate? All right. So I'll give you a couple of examples. You know, there's rules of thumb. I'll give you one example. If you take 20 times your income and withdraw 5%, you've always got 20 years of income set aside. A lot of times people will pull 5% because they go into some type of annuity that guarantees that. So that's some downside. You got another one that you can go in. You can say, well, I can adjust it every year and do 6% of the annual balance. So if the market goes up, then I get more, but the next year if it goes down, I get less. I've always got 16 years set aside as a result of that. So you've got that kind of thing. You know, you've got the old school 4% in a stock and bond portfolio has never run out of money in 30 years, that kind of thing. And so we got all these different optimal withdrawal rates. But one of the things you got to keep in mind, and I like the, you know, if you have enough money, pull the 4% and increase it, you know, every year. So then we go in and we do a kind of an analysis and say, hey, if we have this many different, if we start on the bad times, I always like to show people, hey, let's pick out the bad times and see how you would have done. If the market goes good, you know, everybody's cool. But if it goes bad, you know what, how would you have come out? All right. So we do that kind of stuff. And then we start looking at where do we invest this money? And this is where I'm going to get into a lot of details, kind of talk about annuities and, you know, where do we go and when it comes to things like that. And so I'm going to give you kind of a spectrum. If you were sitting here and said, you know, an index fund, S&P 500 index fund, has averaged 10% over a long haul. And in getting that 10%, we know that about 1 out of 4 years, we're going to have the market go the wrong direction. It's going to lose money. And so you have to be willing to live with that. You're always invested. But at the end of the day, it averages about 10% and so on. So if we put in, if you had a piece of paper and you're sitting here listening to the show, you would put 10% across the top and you would say, okay, 10% is kind of the market. And then at that point, I have to live with some of the downsides. So do I want to, you know, do some things to avoid the downside? Do I want to buy insurance? What do I want to do? And so what we do then is we go in and we say, well, we could go and buy insurance, right? And we could go to the bank and we can put it into a CD or a money market or something like that. And you say, well, what does that do? Well, if you put it into a bank, you're buying insurance on your money. So if you go put $100,000 in and the market, they say, well, we're paying you 0.5% or something like that, you know, on a money market account or a CD, something in that range. For the sake of it, we'll say if you got 1%, then you're saying FDIC insurance to me on my money for principal and interest is worth paying 9% to get. Okay? So I'm willing to pay 9% based on if I had that 10% baseline of the market. I'm willing to pay 9% for that safety. I don't think that's a smart idea. I mean, now I don't mind having a little bit of money in the bank for emergencies and stuff like that, but it's very costly insurance. But it is insurance, and that's why people go to the bank. It's guaranteed, FDIC insured, da 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 da. Okay. Then you say to yourself, well, that's too expensive. All right. I'm going to buy something different. I'm going to go to an insurance company. Now, when I go to the insurance company, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to bet on the fact that the insurance company is going to be able to pay, stay in business, all right, and guarantee my principal and stuff like that. But because the insurance company is not as safe as the FDIC, the cost on it for the insurance is less because it's not as strong as insurance as it would be as the bank. And so you might go into what's called an indexed annuity. And an indexed annuity, you've heard of them, all right? Here's how a couple of things that go along with an indexed annuity. The money, you can defer taxes, okay? And if you don't pull it out, if it's in a non-qualified annuity, you can just defer the taxes if you're not pulling money on it for as long, you know, forever. All right. So you can do that. You can get what's called a lifetime income guarantee to where they say, here's what we'll do. We'll give you 6% for the rest of you and your spouse's life. And if the account goes to zero, all right, we're still going to pay you the money. All right, there you go. So you got some income guarantees, you got tax deferral, that kind of deal. You've got principal guarantees in that if the market goes down, most of your indexed annuities give you zero return. All right. And you say, well, yeah, if the market's down, you know, 1 out of 4 years and I'm only getting 1% over here at the bank and I get zero the year that it's down and then I get a percentage of the upside, that's cool. It's tied to an index. And so people might take their very conservative money and say, rather than the bank, I'm going to move it over here to one of these indexed annuities. All right. So that's what an indexed annuity is. It has principal guarantee, lifetime income guarantees, and it's tax deferred. And so and it's backed up by the insurance company. So you want to get good insurance companies and stuff like that. All right. All right. So then we say, well, I want a better option than that. I don't need this money. All right. It's not a retirement money. I got money sitting in the bank right now. And realistically, I may never use that money. I don't want to pay taxes on it. So you might go into what I call a structured annuity or a buffered annuity. There's all these different names for it. But let me explain. Here's how it works. So the insurance company says, here's what we'll do. You put it in here for a period of time. Most of them are like 6 years. So you take the money, you have $100,000 and you put it in there and they give you these different insurance amounts that they're willing to do. So look, I'll give you an example. They say, well, here's what we'll do. We'll put it in the S&P 500 and we'll give you a 10% downside protection. So if we come back 6 years from now and you put $100,000 in and the S&P's down, the first 10% we will insure and make it up. So if you put $100,000 in and then the next thing you know, the market goes down to $90,000, they turn around and they put the 10 in, you're 6 years into it, you got your $100,000 back and you say, okay, but they have also some lifetime caps on it, 6 year caps. And they come up and they say, well, we'll if you do the 10%, we'll give you 200% return up to that. So if you put 100 in, you can make 300. All right. Or you can do a 20% downside protection and we're going to have less on the upside. And you can do a 25% and less on the upside. So it kind of puts guardrails on the money. And you can put it in there and you invest it. Most of the time when I tell people to do these type of accounts, it's non-qualified money, number one. More than likely money they're never going to use. And meaning that they've got other income sources, things like that. It's not designed as an income stream. And so we go in and do things like that. So third one is called a variable annuity. Now, the variable annuity is invested in the equivalent of what they call their mutual funds inside the annuity wrapper. All right. That annuity wrapper allows you to have professional money management just like you normally would in a mutual fund, but it also has tax deferred growth. The expenses are going to be a little bit more. Okay. Probably about, we're going to say a little bit. They're going to probably run 3%. So you're buying insurance. But at the same time, you might add a lifetime income guarantee to it. And the way the thing works is it's invested so you can get positive rates of return. I go toward that. I have a number of those accounts myself where I take money that I'm not going to use. I'm going to defer it. Okay. The taxes on it, let it grow and so on. And then I'm paying a cost of it. And you don't have to take the income guarantees, which run up your expenses. So if you put your money in there and you don't need the income, well, guess what? It lowers your cost, but it grows tax deferred. So I'm not having to pay taxes on it all the time, every year. And then lastly, I can go into just a regular mutual fund account. I have no guarantees, right? It's taxed, but I'm not paying the cost of the insurance. And typically you can run in. We talked about the index fund. You can get that managed in there for virtually nothing. And so it's just in the market, or you can do a professionally managed mutual fund or at around 1%, or you can turn around and put your money into managed accounts where you pay a flat fee, that kind of thing. So you've got all these different retirement plan choices that you can choose from. And then the question is, do we want to insure them or do we not want to insure? Do we want a portion of this stuff insured where we have some lifetime income on it or do we not? You know, I hear a lot of these radio shows where they, you know, talk about having these guarantees. Well, keep in mind, guarantees always cost you money. All right. So remember that. So do you need guarantees on some things? Yeah, that's why we buy car insurance. In the event, you know, we have a wreck, we have a guarantee that we, you know, can pay. But the point of it is anytime you buy insurance or guarantees, it always costs you money. Now, does it make sense to insure things? a portion of it maybe? Sure. So when I sit down with people, first thing I do is we take a look and ask them and say, do you want a portion of your income to have some guarantees on it? Here's how they would work if we did that. And so when we meet with people, we go through all this. And so if you're listening right now and you'd like help, visit roymatlockjr.com and download some of our resources, listen to the podcast, and call our office, 615-843-2999. Stick with us. Next week, we'll be back with more good information. My name's Roy Matlock Jr. We'll talk to you later.